Okay, Wednesday, 5 p.m. I am here on the right day, aren't I? We just didn't come into the studio and take it over from somebody. Yeah, time for American Hit Radio, y'all, on 90.3 WHBC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. With me, lovely wife, engineer extraordinaire,
and co-host as well.
Yeah, and my taskmaster, Heidi Morales Ryan. Wednesdays, we've been doing two series, not more or less back-to-back in chronological order. We've been ripping our way through a list that we started, maybe 3 years ago, maybe more. I think, like 4 or 5 years ago. Man, time's flying. Let's put it this way. We covered over 200 albums. So, yeah, if we're doing 50 a year, which is the intention, more or less, that means we've been doing this for 4.5 years. Yikes! Crazy. What we've been doing, starting in January of 1964, we made a list of 500 alternative top 40 albums, great albums that did not chart very well in their time. And then we fattened that list out with 500 great albums that did chart, just because every now and then everybody loves a winner, right? People want to hear some of the good stuff that they're familiar with. But the real gist of this is to get to the stuff that runs deep that you might not have heard. Now, although that is the reason we started this, at this point, chronologically, since everything is being presented in a chronological order from January 64, we are now just at the very beginning of 1971. So that's 7 years we've covered so far, right? Excuse me. If we've covered 7 years, it's interesting to note that we've played 126 top 40 albums, but only 93 alternative top 40 albums so far. There just wasn't a whole heck of a lot that you would label as alternative that needed to be covered, because a lot of great albums actually charted on the top 40 back in the 60s. Now that we're in the 70s, it might change a little bit, but it has admittedly been a very long time since we've played an alternative album. So let's get to it, because this is one of my favorites. Really, honestly, maybe one of my all-time favorite alternative albums, but I'm going to bet it's one you've never heard. The name of the band and the name of the album are the same thing, because it's a debut album by the band Little Feat. It came out in January of 1971, and it never charted at all. It was a total failure as far as sales. Anybody who heard it loved it, all six of us. But that was the problem, is that it just really didn't get any recognition. They were on Warner Brothers, and thank God Warner Brothers was a patient label. In those days, labels would stick with their artists if they thought that they deserved it for artistic reasons. So Little Feat got to hang in there, but they weren't selling anything. And to be honest, I didn't hear this album in 1971 either. I heard it much later than that. In fact, I did write an essay about it, so I'm going to read this, because it's a good way to set this up. And it's a relatively short album anyway, so we'll be able to get it all in, I'm sure. Some albums are just impossible to comprehend. The only reason I bought this album is because I became a Little Feat fan around the time of the last record album in 1975, which was their fifth album. And I liked it enough to delve into the band's back catalog. The most striking thing about working backward through their career was their progression. Other than David Bowie, I never heard a band change so much from album to album. And this, now recognized as a quality, made it difficult to appreciate each album on its own merit. After all, if you approach a catalog backward, there are expectations. But Little Feat in reverse never matched my preconceived notions. Each record required multiple listens to reveal itself, but none more so than their first eponymous album. Hearing the last record album first, I couldn't even comprehend that this was the same band. The core personnel, guitar, piano, drums, were essentially the same, but everything else was different. What on earth is this record trying to be? What could possibly cause a band to release something as uncategorizably strange as this debut record? I played this album about 10 times before I drew genuine pleasure from hearing it. Without being cognizant of my subtle but steady change in attitude, Little Feat became a passion and an all-time favorite, meaning this album. I'm not implying that I understand it. After four decades, I still find myself wondering about the band's motives, their intentions, and especially their lyrical ambiguities, Lowell George's in particular. As I literally find myself growing old with this album, I recognize that the thing I love is the combination of simplicity and confounding weirdness. How can I reconcile the superficial dumbness with the profound spirituality? Fully half of Lowell George's songs are told from the perspective of an American cross-country trucker, yet somehow balanced by tales told by a warped and lustful teenaged hippie hitchhiker. I've gone gray in the interim, but I still cannot believe that the same guy wrote both Truck Stop Girl and Brides of Jesus. Hamburger Midnight, what the hell, is pulled together by the same human being who composed the heartbreakingly sad I've Been the One. This is an album that wants you to laugh and cry simultaneously, and the push-pull of emotions are aided and abetted. Well, that's all I've got, because I've lost the rest of my essay. But be that as it may, the first album on Warner Brothers has this really strange cover. It's the band standing in front of a gigantic mural called Venice in the Snow. The mural itself looks to stand maybe 20 feet tall, maybe 15, with a blue sky in the back. And the band members on the cover, they're standing no taller than an inch. They look so tiny. Lowell George was not the only songwriter. The piano player, Billy Payne, was writing songs as well. And what you're going to hear is, like, on Billy Payne's songs, almost all of them are confessional and self-analytical. Well, Lowell's songs vary between, like I said, the hippie hitchhiker sort of guy and the truck driver, the trucker who just basically drives around the country. It's such a strange combination, but it works brilliantly. So let's get into it. The first song is this is another thing that's very strange. The album, although it's very much Lowell George's band, there's hardly any doubt about it. He had just been fired from the Mothers of Invention with Frank Zappa. He was playing on a couple of albums, and for a variety of reasons, and the story is varied. Even Lowell George would tell it differently. But the thing that seems to be consistent is that Lowell George wrote a song called Willin, and he played it for Frank Zappa. And Zappa said, "That's it, you're fired." Lowell George attributed it to the fact that the song has drug references, and Zappa was incredibly, profoundly straight, and he would not have had any part of putting out a song that would have had drug references in it. But he also apparently recognized Lowell's talents because he went out of his way to help him get a recording contract to put his band together. When the time came, Lowell actually brought the bass player from Mothers of Invention with him, Roy Estrada, came out. At the same time, Billy Payne, a piano player, was auditioning to join the Mothers of Invention with Frank Zappa, but he didn't take any job. So George knew of him, so he brought him along, and he was also already in a band called the Fraternity of Man with Richie Hayward. So that became the core of the band. You know, Lowell and his drummer basically brought Roy Estrada from Zappa's band and Billy Payne, who was just kind of floating around. What makes it so great is that Lowell was this great slide guitar player and a weird, crazy vocalist. Billy Payne is essentially a classical piano player who is able to do all sorts of beautiful things. And the combination is fierce, especially when you have one of the most incredible rock drummers maybe ever in Richie Hayward. And Roy Estrada holds his own here. He only lasts with the band for the first two albums, and then the classic lineup begins. But hang in there with this record and see what you think. The first track is, like I said, a Billy Payne song, very self-analytical. It's called, for reasons I cannot tell you, Snakes on Everything on 90.3 WHPC. To keep in mind that it's Lowell George alone who is making all that guitar racket. He's the only guitar player in the band, and he's playing every part. And it's incredibly well thought out and layered, the way that he's got the question and answer thing happening with his slide and with his rhythm playing on that, which, like I said, was a Billy Payne song. Just a way to come out of the gate with something that odd is already going to be like the type of thing where the average listener is not going to even get what's going on with a song like that because of Billy Payne's like analytical lyrics. And it's not a love song. It's basically a Why Am I Here sort of a song. And it's called Snakes on Everything. So what? What does that mean, right?
Like snakes on planes.
Yeah, it's about as meaningful as that, I suppose. Now, Lowell comes out with this next track, written with Billy Payne, but it's definitely a trucker song, but in a weird, like I said, it's not that hippie dude trucker thing. Ripped off and run out of town. I had my guitar burned when I was clowning. Haven't slept in a bed for a week, and my shoes feel like they're part of my feet. It goes on and on. It's worth it to listen to the words, because it's just incredibly entertaining. And this is where Lowell George begins to get his ideas for crazy phraseology, setting things up that are a bit surreal and yet profoundly entertaining. This song is called Strawberry Flats on 90.3 WHPC.
Ripped off and run.
It's a song by the band. They were freaks at this point, really. I mean, they just came out of Mothers of Invention, you know, for God's sake. So, I mean, that's about as freaky of a band as there was in America at the time. And Lowell was wearing, he was living it. I mean, he was, actually, you know, everybody thinks you get a record contract and that automatically means that you have a lot of money. But, I mean, the lyrics make it quite obvious that that's not the case. Got a ride on a highway king, made the crossroads by 9:15. If I don't find a place to crash, well, I might as well cash it all in. And then, you know, if I were a no-count gambler or a Texas fool or maybe a millionaire with a suit and real short hair, or do you even care? it's the ramblings of the underground. And, well, and his crew are very actively representing that part of society on this album. And yet, I think that the truck driver songs are sort of like a bit of a fantasy of Lowell's. I think that he is imagining himself in that role as being able to get out of, like, maybe the bowels of L.A., where he's probably living around this time, and imagining if he could travel the country in the Highway King that he was talking about hitching a ride on. And this next song pretty much sets that up. It's an incredibly straightforward song about a guy who falls in love with a girl at a truck stop. Simply called Truck Stop Girl on 90.3 WHBC.
His taillights flicker as he pulled up to the truck stop. The same old crowd was hanging out again tonight. He said, fill up my tank while I go check my load. It feels like it's shifting off.
The thing that made this album so difficult to sell was that there was almost zero continuity. Every song almost could be a different band. Like, stylistically, Strawberry Flats has nothing in common with Truck Stop Girl. Truck Stop Girl doesn't sound at all even like the same band that did the first track, Snakes on Everything. And that more or less continues as this album goes on, which is why it took me a while to sink in and get it. This is a band that by 1975, in five short years, would become one of the most funky and rhythmically complex bands in America. And they did it by allowing space rather than filling up all the holes. it was a beautiful thing to behold. And it was, and they actually taught me an awful lot about how to play in ensemble playing in a band, you know, when to get out of the way, leave room for somebody else to fill in something, which is therefore adds to the syncopation rather than having it all just be a messy jumble. Nobody did it better than Little Feat. But going back to here, they're a four-piece band, and really what they're going for is just diversity, and they're succeeding immensely. Now, this next track has become probably one of my favorite songs of all time. And again, can I tell you what it's about? Not really. It's got a very evocative name. The song is called Brides of Jesus. And it just, it's just so moving the way that it is set up. And what's interesting is they actually use a string section on it. They brought in a guy named Kirby Johnson to write some of the arrangements. And the string section, when they finally do roll in the middle section, where Billy Payne, again, Billy Payne with his beautiful, evocative piano, makes this song just sound so rich and it alludes to so many different things. But the title is provocative as well as evocative. Like I said, you may as well just listen to it and see what you think. This is the track. It's called Brides of Jesus on 90.3 WHPC. By the way, written by Billy Payne and Lowell George together.
Matthew stood by the wall and watched his love below. Her pale hair came in golden rings down below her shoulders as she waved and slowly turned around to find the path that led her to the ancient gate was closed. She said,
one of my favorite types of songwriting that they employ on there, where it's It's more or less just like a linear style of writing. There's no defined verse or chorus. The song just sort of moves from place to place to place, sounding as though it's building you up and taking you somewhere. And it does. It's a bit of a journey rather than bringing you back to the chorus and repeating it. And the thing that makes a pop song, I suppose, is its repetition. But a song like that, which basically totally does away with repetition for the most part, takes a few listens for it to sink in. And then the words, well, how does it end? Like on, I never even knew what a tender hook was. It's those things I think that they used to hang meat on.
I think so.
It's a tender hook. And that's, you know, he uses that as a word in the song, on tender hooks.
Yes.
End to be pleasure bent. Their voices filled the air. It may bring you so much sorrow that you may be entertaining angels unawares. And that's how it ends. How strange, right? All of this came about, though, because he wrote one song that got him kicked out of Zappa's band, The Mothers of Invention. He recorded it on this album the first time. It was just Little George doing an acoustic version, pretty much by himself, except he put slide on top of it. And the problem is that when it was time to record the song, he had hurt his hand. I don't know if he broke his wrist. That's the story that I heard. But he was unable to play guitar on his own song. And the resident slide guitar player at Warner Brothers happened to be Ry Cooder. He played with everybody. So Ry Cooder came in and played and took over what would have been Little George's job, to play slide guitar on his own song. Of course, it's never a problem to have Ry Cooder come around. He's obviously a fabulous player. I can't help but wonder what would have happened if it was low. Well, actually, I don't have to ask, because when they put out their second album, they re-recorded the song with the band, and Lowell playing all the parts made it much prettier. This is a much more raw version, though, probably the way that Zappa heard it when Lowell George first presented it. Now probably the song most associated with the band. Here is Willin' on 90.3 WHPC.
I've been warped by the rain, driven by the snow. I'm drunk and dirty, don't you know? And I'm still, oh, I'm still. Walk out on the road late at night, I see my pretty Alice in every headlight. Alice, Alice, Alice. I've been from Tucson to Tucumcari, to Hatchby to Tonopah. Driven every kind of rig that's ever been made. And I've driven the back road so I won't get weighed. And if you give me weed, whites, and wine, and then you show me a sign, I'll be willing to be moving. Now, smuggled some smokes from folks in Mexico, baked by the sun almost every time I go to Mexico. And I'm willing. And I've been kicked by the wind, robbed by the sleet, had my head stoved in, but I'm still on my feet and I'm willing. Oh, I'm willing. And I've been from Tucson to Tucumcari, to Hatchby to Tonopah. Driven every kind of rig that's ever been made. Driven the backwoods so I won't get weighed. And if you give me weed, whites, and wine, and then you show me a sign, I'll be willing to be moving.
Such a strange song to become like the brand for the band, so to speak, the flagship tune, right? There's so many things about that song that are totally weird, but it's the song that everybody remembers the band for. When we get to the second album, the second album, of course, will be featured in this series when we get up to it. When we get to 1972, we'll play the more well-known version, I suppose. But Roy Estrada has writing credits with Lal George together on the next song, which is just another example of just Lal George doing his rather somewhat brilliant, surreal word mashup sort of songs. Square Knees was asking for a reason. How can I go sleeping in a car? I got red hot tires. My tires are smoking. you can maybe get the rest of it, but it's all about he's got the Hamburger Midnight Blues on 90.3 WHPC. Side one of one of the strangest albums that I ever fell in love with. But the thing is, like, a lot of people think of Little Feat. I know a lot of people say, oh, they're like a boogie band. Believe me, nothing is more ridiculous. And it kind of insults me when I hear that because they have one song called Tripe Face Boogie, which is a great bit of a joke of a song. The band is anything but that. They work on 1,000 different levels. And here they are on the first album out of the gate doing so much that's crazy and different. Okay, on side two is yet another huge change of pace. Lal George was apparently a very big Chester Burnett fan. If you don't know who Chester Burnett is, his professional name is Howlin' Wolf. Lal George is the reason that I love Howlin' Wolf. I didn't know of him until after I became a Little Feat fan and then investigated. And Howlin' Wolf became my favorite blues singer ever, more than Muddy Waters. And on this album, he performs basically two songs. It's not a medley. He just does two songs in their entirety. And I think it was happening because he broke his damned arm and he couldn't play guitar. So since Ry Cooder was coming in, I think, well, just said, listen, let's jam on a couple of Howlin' Wolf tracks. I'll sing, you play slide, and we'll see where it takes us. It's very loose and really awesome. I hope you enjoy the next 6 minutes of some really fun blues by Little Feat with Lal George on vocals called 44 Blues, How Many More Years? on 90.3.
Now
easily the loosest song on the album. But man, Will George does a mean Howlin' Wolf, doesn't he?
Oh, man.
Incredible. Not an easy guy to imitate, let me tell you. I would not even think that
sounding voice would come out of Lowell George.
Yeah, I mean, you think about
surprising.
Think about the voice that you heard on Brides of Jesus and then on that, and it's the same man. Now, up until now, there's been no, like I said, the album just doesn't really gel as a theme because there's so many disparate styles on it. But the next song more or less sets it up. It's that down for the count, teenaged hippie guy, the hitchhiking guy that we heard on side one with the song Strawberry Flats. This song, next track that I'm about to play, sounds like it's that exact same character. So it must come very close to what Lowell George was like in his late teens or early 20s. It's called Crackin' Your Door on 90.3 WHPC.
I don't even know what I did wrong. But a real man said if I didn't get out of town, I might not live too long. And I can still see your mother with her hair up and rolled. As she cast a telling glance at that young girl, red-eyed eyes. Sometimes I think I could lose all my troubles, but here I stand. They're trying to cure me with nicotine and with shit. Watching the faces passing me by. And I've been holding out my hand, waiting for luck to come at my command. But the glow from around my head is gone. And if I don't get a ride real soon, I might be
the wind through the crack in your door. Now imagine that exact same character now suddenly being overwhelmed by the sadness of his circumstance, beginning to do a little bit of self-analysis and saying, why am I so poor? Why does everybody hate me? How come I got to stand out on the street for 4 or 5 hours at a time with my thumb out, hoping I can get a ride somewhere? And then he just becomes reflective and ends up with one of the prettiest songs on the entire album. Maybe one of the prettiest songs that came out in 1971. It's called I've Been the One. On 90.3 WHBC.
I've been the one who has been frightened and almost born away by the very thoughts that I feared yesterday. And it must be dust or smoke that's in my eyes. How can I cry about something from someone I won't see? All my friends all say she had her chance. Let's go shoot something. You know a fool is just a fool. And I've tried everything that whiskey cures, but the pain endures. And now I'm feeling that pain. Smoke
smoke that's in my eye.
Well, George, in a thoughtful moment there with I've Been
Very
the One.
Pensive.
And now in a moment of like just aligning the songs that I think is a stroke of total genius is they let Billy Payne answer, in a sense, with his own deeply introspective song. Again, taken from the point of a not quite child, a very young man, where he feels as though everybody is on him and expecting things from him, and he's not fulfilling their expectations. And he just has to respond with exactly how he intends to handle it himself. Please try to listen to the words. Billy Payne is just a piece of work, the way the song is constructed, how beautiful it is. It's called I'm Taking My Time on 90.3 WHPC.
I'm taking my time, so please don't rush me. I gotta sort out some things I didn't know existed. Cause the rest doesn't matter. I'm tired of talk, so please don't push me. You know I want the same things that you do. You're wasting your time.
They may have been freaky and representing that part of society, but at this point in time, there's also a deep innocence to what they're saying. Billy Payne sounds like a son talking to parents that won't get off of his back. The way the song ends, why try to outguess a situation that I know you're not even fully aware of. I want you to know that if it keeps on this way, I can't keep on letting you bring me down. He doesn't even bother to make it rhyme. It just sounds like something that came out in conversation. And he said, I'm going to write chords for that. It's interesting also to note that when this album came out, British royalty, music royalty, fell over themselves. Rolling Stones declared Little Feat the best American band, their favorite American band. Led Zeppelin did the exact same thing. Jimmy Page was singing praise and glory about Little Feat. They were the only two that did, the only two bands. I mean, like I said, nobody else got a chance to hear them, which is a terrible shame. But at least here it is. It's funny that here it is almost 50 years later, and I can play the album in its entirety on the radio and still sing its praises. So I feel good about that. All right, one song left. You thought that side one ended weird with Hamburger Midnight. Side two ends just as weird. A song that is some sort of a tale of a crazy captain of a gunboat who is becoming paranoid after being at sea for too long. Shouldn't listen to people if you're paranoid. I think that's maybe the theme of this song. We'll leave you then with a track called Crazy Captain Gunboat Willie, the last song from the Little Feat's debut album. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back on Friday. Oh, by the way, it will be our last show for the Radio Days series that we've been doing, so hope you can join us. All right, see you then. Take care, folks.
Crazy Captain Gunboat Willie, growl out his commands, and all the able seamen clicked their heels and swore they would protect the noble ship in peacetime. Just then, Luke the Rat from down below called to Gunboat Bill. He said,
listen to those madmen wail. They've been at sea for 90 days without the sight of land. No, it doesn't look so good to me. No, it doesn't look so good at all.
The captain pondered what the rat had said till he think of nothing more. And then he threw his crew into the foaming sea at least 1,000 miles from shore. And he danced a jig until the dawn, sang a loyal captain's song, drank a pot of steam and rum, did all the things that loyal captains do. The rat looked hard at Gunboat Bill, and he said in a serious tone,
this show is brought to you by La Piazza Pizza.